And then we have our final speaker, Chris Kavanagh. You want to go ahead and share your screen? And Chris will be talking about
Sure.
progress in post-Newtonian cell force at second order. We'll take it
So
away.
you can hear me? Oh,
Yep.
not. Okay. Yeah, so I'm going to be talking about, I guess, for the second chapter in a row, progress in applying the post-Newtonian approach to cell force at second order. So this is doing cell force where you put your emery on a large radius orbit and then calculate the cell force perturbatively as expansions in one over that large radius. And this has been very successful at first order. This was talked about yesterday by Soichiro, and he presented some very nice applications of this to the waveform in generic orbits and curves. So we're interested in extending this now to second order. And we saw a lot of talks today about the kind of very kind of impressive and complicated methods that would need to be used to do a full second order cell force calculation. And what I'm going to focus on here is a very specific problem for PN, which is, say we had a first and second order Tarkovsky equation. So let's go to this one, this guy and this guy. And do we know how to solve the second order Tarkovsky equation if we have the source? So is the methodology there or not? And to explain why this is an interesting question, I'll go back to first order post-Newtonian cell force. So when we're working at first order, remember what we need to calculate the first order cell force is really just the first order metric perturbation in the limit that the field point goes to the position of the particle. So when people were doing post-Newtonian cell force, this led to the following assumptions in solving the Tarkovsky equation. So you assume your particle is on an orbit with position R0, which is large. And then you're going to assume your field point, your field point R is also large, but specifically it's near your small particle. So it's not arbitrarily large, it's in the same ballpark as the source. And then also you're going to assume that the frequency of the orbit scales like the orbital frequency of the particle. And that just comes out of the calculation. And then when you do this and you generate solutions to your first order Tarkovsky equation, what you get is an asymptotic expansion, an asymptotic solution to the Tarkovsky equation, which is valid in some region around your small particle. So if you plotted it against numerics, it would fail out here and it would fail down here. And this was fine for first order, because like I said, we only needed the metric perturbation near the particle. But at second order, our source is formed from the first order metric perturbation everywhere. So that means at second order, the value of the field down here is going to kind of propagate out and influence the value of your field at the particle. And likewise, the field values out here are going to propagate in and influence the value of your second order field at the particle. So this tells us that this solution alone is certainly not going to be enough to give us a solution of this field equation. We're going to need to get some information somehow in the strong field and out here to infinity. Okay, so to see that a bit more mathematically, I'm going to go back to how we solve the Tarkovsky equation. So let's just say this is the radial Tarkovsky equation. So I'm going to put LMs here. Then how we form a solution to the Tarkovsky equation is just by doing variation of parameters. So all you need is a pair of homogeneous solutions, phi plus and minus. And of course, the inhomogeneous solution psi is given by this combination. And everything really reduces to calculating these two normalization coefficients, C plus and minus. And these guys are given by integrals against the source. And this is where you see the problem. So the integral itself goes from the horizon all the way to the particle, and likewise from the field point all the way to infinity. So these integrals are really the problem. They leave that PN region that we built our asymptotic expansion in. Okay, so how do we deal with that? And what we do is we're gonna, do a little bit of a trick. So if we want to determine our field in this region, then the way we kind of fix these integrals is you just rewrite them in a very simple way. You take this definite integral and rewrite it as an indefinite integral and add a constant. So this is what you learn when you're first doing calculus. And what's happening here is now we can perform this integral because we just plug in our expansions in this region And then this constant and this constant are going to tell you, well, are going to really contain the information that you missed out here and out here. But this clearly isn't good enough, because if you do this, then you're going to end up with a PN expansion with two undetermined constants. We don't want that. That's not enough. That won't give us all the information. So now we have to figure out a way to include the missing information here and here. The way we do that is we're going to build up a couple of extra expansions. So we're going to split our space time into three regions, which I'll label region one, region two, and region three. And then in each region, we're going to build an expansion, an asymptotic expansion to the field equations, a different asymptotic expansion. And I'll label these by EI of EI acting on the solution. So E for expansion, I for the region you're in. And that'll give you your expansion in a given region. And then in each region, we're going to have different normalization coefficients given by that definite integral, where this integral is given by expanding in that region. I haven't said what the expansions are yet. I will in a minute. And then in each region, we're going to have two constants. So we're going to have a total of six constants, two for each region. OK, that's great. So we have three expansions, and now we have even more constants. Are we getting farther or closer to a solution? And the answer is, well, it should be that if we combine all three regions, we should have all the information. Whatever region is missing is exactly the part of the integral given by the other regions. So all we need is a way to somehow combine the information from the three different regions. And this is essentially the basis for how you do matched asymptotic expansions, which is a very widely used technique. And what you do is, so for instance, you take your expansion that's valid in this region, and you kind of push it out into this region. So I write that as E1 of psi, and then E2 acting on that. So that sends the expansion in this region out here. And likewise, you take your expansion in this region, and you expand it out to that region. So E1 out to E2. And then since what we're trying to do is calculate the same function, you should be able to impose some kind of agreement here. So these two should really give the same thing. And this is essentially a imposition of some kind of continuity of the function throughout the radial domain. And when you do this, what you end up with is getting some kind of relation between the constants in these two regions. And then likewise, you do the same thing going within these two regions, and then you'll get even more relations between the constants in those two regions. And ultimately, you'll get a big wide set of simultaneous equations. And hopefully, if you do everything right, everything should get uniquely determined. And then you'll be able to say exactly what is your field in this region without any undetermined parameters left over. OK, so now I'm going to talk about a more explicit example of this method and hopefully be a little less vague. So what we decided to do was tackle a slightly simpler problem than the full first and second order Tchaikovsky equations, mostly because we don't have them. So we're going to do, firstly, a kind of trivial simplification. We're going to set the spin weight in our Tchaikovsky equation to zero. This just means that I have to deal with spin zero spherical harmonics instead of spin weighted ones. So that's not a big deal. And more significantly, the simplification we're going to make is we're going to take the second order Tchaikovsky source and just, instead of having it be a functional of the first order metric perturbation, we're just going to say it's a linear function of the solution of our first order equation. So it's still non-zero everywhere, which means we still need to use this matched asymptotic expansion to get a full solution for this guy. But we have a lot easier time constructing this. So this gives us a test of our methods if we can do this. And then the other thing is that I actually didn't really pick this out of thin air. This is exactly, in disguise, the equation for M2AF, which Leanne, our host, our chair, mentioned earlier. So if we can solve this equation, what we're getting, as well as a test for methods, is a way to get Lorentz gauge post-Newtonian solutions, which surprisingly hasn't been done before. OK, so what are the expansions in the three different regions? Well, in the first one, which maybe I'll draw it again. So region one is here. So yeah, so there. So the one in region one, so this is a region where we can't really impose any asymptotic condition on our radial field point, because it's just some number order one or order the mass of the black hole. But what we can impose is that our field is slowly varying. And this is really because if you think about it, your emery is on some large radius, and so it's moving slowly. So whatever the field is in the strong field, it must be slowly varying. And we're going to use that then to build an asymptotic solution to the Tucholsky equation, just assuming this. Out in region two, we're going to use the usual post-Newtonian assumptions, the same ones we use at first order. And then out in region three, we're going to say that we have a wave zone expansion. So this is where you assume the radius goes like one over the frequency. And the frequency again remains small because of our post-Newtonian orbit. That's 2 minutes till questions. Super. Okay. So then how do things look when we do this? So just to give some kind of, these may or may not be useful, but some sample expansions of how things look when we go through all the machinery. So what is the expansion of the second order field for L equals one, M equals one in region one? So you get two terms, essentially. You get this first term here, which comes from that definite integral I mentioned. And it depends on the transmission, the ingoing coefficient of the first order field at the horizon. And then you get this behavior depending on the radial field point. And then you get your two terms involving constants, which depends on homogeneous solutions in this region, which are Legendre functions, Legendre P and Legendre Q. The one thing I haven't mentioned so far is that the other thing we need to impose is boundary conditions. I'm not going to talk about that so much, but what you get when you do is that this term vanishes if you impose a boundary condition at the horizon. So then if we take this and expand it in the PN region, what that means is we're just going to take our radius to infinity. We're just going to take a large radius expansion of this guy, order by order in the frequency. And then you get this. Okay. Now, how about the PN region? Well, when I do that, I also get two terms. I get the constant terms, and I get the terms arising from the definite integral. Okay. So now to expand this into region one, I just take a low frequency expansion, which is trivial because the only dependence comes up here. So then by I, you can just see by looking at these two expressions, there is no one over omega squared piece. Therefore, that term we're going to set to be zero, just to kill it off. We see immediately that this term agrees with this term, which is great. That means everything is working as it should. And then from the leftover linear and R piece, we get some condition relating these two guys. And then when you repeat this procedure, I won't do it now, but when you repeat this procedure for the other two regions, the wave zone and the PN zone, you end up fixing this coefficient and thus this coefficient, and then you get a complete solution, a complete unique solution. Okay, and here is some kind of very, very preliminary plots of how that compares with numerics. I should say the numerics were provided by Leanne, thank you. And what we have here is a plot of the real part of the second order field, quote unquote, against the radius. In red is the kind of PN expansion, so region two. In green is region three. And I'm not really showing the strong field region here just because it's kind of invisible because it's so small. And it's kind of, the agreement is kind of mediocre. This is essentially for a 2PN calculation, which is first order in the strong field regime. So you don't really expect it to be very good. But nonetheless, we still see some kind of decent agreement between the blue is the numerics, I should have said, between the red and the blue here. And then as you go out, you eventually see the green agreeing nicely with the numerics. And then hopefully, as we increase the order and kind of do this more systematically, this kind of agreement will get better. Okay, so I'll stop there.
Thanks, Chris.
I'll leave my conclusions on screen.
Thanks. I think Daniel might tell me we don't have time for questions, unfortunately. Right. But thanks very much, Chris, and we'll leave it there.